Fresh warnings today about a humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan as it marks 100 days of a return to Taliban rule. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. A senior Red Cross official says international policies designed to withhold funds from the Taliban are depriving ordinary Afghan people the means of survival. International aid kept the nation financially afloat in recent years, but it disappeared after the fall of the Western-backed government in August. Now, 23 million people live below the poverty line in Afghanistan, but the Taliban blames the West for the worsening crisis and says the world needs to take immediate action to prevent catastrophe. The BBC's Yalda Hakim sent this report from Kabul, which some listeners may find distressing.
In a narrow alley in southeast Kabul, the World Food Programme has called hundreds of families, men, women, to come to a food distribution site so that they can collect some food to help them through the harsh winter that is looming.
This is a nation on the brink of starvation, and for aid agencies, it's a race against time.
Young men wearing the traditional peron tambon working for the World Food Programme load up flour onto the back of wheelbarrows, and then they run through the dust past all the people waiting in a queue, past the Taliban authorities standing there guarding the gate, to drop off the flour onto the back of vans and pickup trucks to then be dropped off to the hungry.
Emotions begin to run high. Nafisa, draped in a black headscarf with saffron-coloured trimming, has arrived with her young disabled son, pleading for help.
All I have is God and this child. I keep coming and they keep turning me away. I don't know where my next meal is coming from.
The WFP says they're doing everything they can, but they know it's not enough. Nafisa tells me she's desperate.
I used to work at a school. My salary was $53. Not a lot, but enough to get by. I haven't had a salary in 4 months. What is the point living with no food or water? My landlord tells me if I can pay, I stay. If not, I'll have to leave. We've just been abandoned. I often pray and ask God to just end my life.
The Taliban, who now run Afghanistan, point the finger of blame at the international community.
Because they have imposed sanctions and other steps which has led to a humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. I think the international community and other countries who are speaking about human rights and educating of human rights, they have such claims, they should reconsider, not take steps which lead to humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan.
The United Nations says almost 23 million Afghans are marching towards starvation. 95% of people don't have enough food.
We've just come to the Indira Gandhi Children's Hospital, where there are many cases of children suffering from acute malnutrition.
There, we're shown around by one of the nurses.
Malnutrition has always been a problem here, but it was seasonal. In the summer it was increasing, but by the autumn the number of patients was declining. Now we're seeing more and more people coming in severely malnourished.
On the wards of this hospital, you see the youngest victims of the crisis. Gulnara, 3 years old, is so weak she can barely keep her eyes open. Her eyes are sunken, her hair is thinning. When she seems to wake up, she cries in pain. This is what severe malnutrition is doing to the children of Afghanistan. Afghanistan is in the midst of a humanitarian crisis. Even when the Western-backed government was in power, malnutrition was rife. When the Taliban took over and the international support evaporated, crisis swiftly turned into catastrophe.
That's the BBC's Yalda Hakim reporting from Kabul there.
Turning our focus now to financial markets, where growing concerns about a winter wave of COVID-19 across Europe are keeping investors on edge. Checking the numbers, the Stoxx 600 index is down about 0.9%. Elsewhere, Turkey's lira has hit another fresh record low. The 8% decline today comes after President Erdogan continues to defend the central bank's move last week to slash interest rates despite surging inflation and a rapidly depreciating currency. He says the cuts were necessary to win a, quote, economic war of independence. And the Brent and West Texas oil benchmarks are down more than 1%. That's ahead of an anticipated announcement from the White House, which reports suggest could come as early as today that it will release emergency oil reserves to help combat high prices. India is said to be one of three other countries participating in that kind of release. Separately, the U.S. Trade Representative is in India for a two-day visit to establish a forum to help deepen bilateral trade and regular contact to resolve obstacles. From Mumbai, the BBC's Nikhil Anamdar explains what that might look like.
The number of issues, Victoria, on which the two sides have clashed in the past, things such as higher tariffs or restrictive digital trade measures that India has taken in the past, as well as market access. And bilateral trade between India and the U.S. actually runs into tens of billions of dollars. But critics really say that there's far more potential that the two really haven't met.
So, Nikhil, what can we expect by the end of this two-day visit from the U.S. Trade Representative this week?
There's hope that there would be some progress on the longstanding issues, which I just mentioned, because trade negotiators have been struggling for over a year to iron out these issues. Also, labor issues are expected to be part of the dialogue. And both countries have also agreed to revive their trade policy forum after a gap of 4 years to expand bilateral trade. There are certain reports which also suggest that US and India could announce the release of oil from their reserves in concert with other countries like South Korea. This is being seen as an effort to bring down prices after OPEC plus countries didn't pay heed to the US calls to boost production. But this is only in the realm of speculation right now, and a report from Bloomberg, which the BBC hasn't independently verified.
The BBC's Nikhil Anamdar in Mumbai for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
To Taiwan now, where the island's economy minister held talks with the U.S. focused on China's economic coercion. The discussion comes a week after a virtual meeting between the U.S. and China, where President Xi warned supporting Taiwanese independence is, quote, playing with fire. Now, Beijing has issued another warning, this time to Taiwanese firms and those that finance them. The BBC's Robin Brandt has that story.
Pressure on Taiwan from a few dozen miles across the water comes in many forms. Beijing's latest attempt is to target companies from the island that are invested in the mainland, but which it says support full independence for Taiwan. Far Eastern Group has confirmed that two of its units were fined for violating environmental, taxation or fire safety regulations. A Chinese government spokeswoman would only say that what she called diehard politicians and their associated companies would be severely punished. Earlier this month, China said it would pursue some people that it claims are backing splittist forces and make them criminally responsible for life. Beijing has increased its military and diplomatic pressure on Taiwan since its current president was elected 5 years ago, claiming the island was already independent.
That's the BBC's Robin Brandt reporting from Shanghai there. Finally, if you're still on the hunt for the perfect holiday gift, how about a rare manuscript from Albert Einstein? The 54-page document, which shows the calculations the famed physicist made as he tried to formulate his general theory of relativity, goes on sale in Paris today with an estimated price tag of more than $3 million. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.